Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Ready for a career in behavioral health? Earn your online degree at Herzing University. Choose from health and human services, psychology, or social work programs. Gain the skills to work, coordinate, and manage nonprofits. Secure a bachelor's in psychology to study mental health or advance your social work career through our online Masters of Social Work. Let us help you become a social change agent. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Text HEALTH to 85109. That's HEALTH to 85109. Or visit herzing.edu.
Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino online.
I was only playing for fun, so winning was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's favorite free online social casino. You too could have the chance to win life-changing cash prizes. Absolutely anybody could be like Mary. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and play for free now. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details. The voice of the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of the winner.
Welcome to the show. Today's episode is proudly sponsored by Grow Generation, where the pros go to grow. More on them in a bit. Welcome, everybody, to the Animeversal Reviews Podcast, where we review anime, just like the title says. And that sound, that wonderful music, and guy that had, sounds like he has no stutter in reality. It's just clever editing, ladies and gentlemen. That's right. It's time for the Animeversal Reviews Podcast this week. I would say with all three regular guests, but unfortunately, my significant other, Christine, is Christine's not feeling so hot today. So I'm here with my hetero life mate, Brian. What's up, bud?
Hey, man.
Some people might not get that joke. I just realized
we're old, man.
Which is a Kevin Smith reference for those of you that don't know.
Kids don't know.
Yeah. Dude, when was the first time Jay referred to him as that? I think, was it the Clerks cartoon or was it Dogma? I don't remember.
I don't know.
But I always laugh at that line. But yeah, anyways, man. Dr. Stone, we had to take a week off, unfortunately. But we're back this week with Episode 7, Secret Mission. It is definitely just like episode 5. After the high of episode 4 and episode 6, episode 5 suffered a bit. And I think this episode, to me, had some of the same issues. But there's still a lot of really good stuff here and a sign of something I'm really stoked to talk about. Brian, what did you feel about this episode overall?
I agree. It's an episode that felt a little slower, but it had a few really big things in it. So it was like, including one that was very shocking. So all in all, there's not been a bad episode, and this one it's decent, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of like, Manny had said this morning, for those of you guys that haven't, or I say this morning, but you know, the morning of the day we recorded this, he had pointed something out about Marvel shows when we were grading Falcon and Winter Soldier as a series, right? And he was like, people have gotten or we brought up the point that people have gotten so like focused where anything below like a BB is like bad. Like even I've kind of been guilty of that, where it's like a C, and then I'm like, now I want to use the C like appropriately. I don't even think we've had a real C episode in this, like a boring, pointless, it can go by the wayside, which is to me what C kind of sort of is, but I don't know. I agree. There's no bad episode, and when you got a whole bunch of good stuff inside of something like Marvel, which is what Manny was comparing Falcon and Winter Soldier to, of course, it's like anytime something doesn't stand up to the cream of that crop, it has to take a hit because you're expecting a certain level. I think Dr. Stone, especially in episode, you know, 4 of this season, and definitely in season 1, but in episode 4, this show stepped up, Brian, in a way most animes can't, you know. And I think potentially the whole future of the show might suffer because of episodes like 4 and 6 from this season. What do you think?
Yeah, because it's, you know, we're on a season 2 and it hasn't started slipping. You know, some animes go way off the rails. And so far, this one hasn't. And because of that, yeah, I don't know. It's getting to the... I mean, we'll talk more as we go into this episode, but it clearly this plot line is coming to a close soon. Mm-hmm. And so then the big question screams out, what's next? And I know the manga has been going for a while, or, you know, there's several volumes. So clearly there is a something next. And the question is, what is it? And is it going to, like you said, live up to what's come before it? And, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be really, really interesting. But let's go ahead and get into it a bit. The episode starts off like we've, you know, been dealing with all season, a little bit of retreading. But we do get into the episode fairly quickly. Senku describes, you know, the attack plan to get the miracle fluid cave, secure it, and you know, secure keeping Tsukasa from growing his army. You get to start saving people, and it's the saving people that's very, very important, a big clue. Because that deals with the secret mission that's someone's on. Chrome gets to share some of the info on, like what Yukio did, when he captured him, you know, undoing the ropes and some of the things that he said, like, you know, lying to, Tsukasa about, where he found Chrome at. And, Senku mentions that, Yuzuriha is on a secret mission, so it's not likely that she had given, Chrome the battery, which, you know, we were all wondering last episode who gave Chrome the battery, and I think we all were like, looking at the coat, it's probably a misdirection. It was likely Yukio, and it will turn out that way later. But yeah, man, that's kind of like the opening of it, and then we get right into the voice plan going into effect. And what do you think about Senku's evolving plan as like things change and his, you know, target from, you know, let's go on this forward assault to let's do a rescue to let's go after the cave. What do you think about the storytelling in the evolution of battle plan?
Well, it's funny because the show never outright tells us what's coming next until they're about to do it. And it works brilliantly because it keeps you constantly guessing and wondering what's next. Taking the cave makes complete sense. You know, he explains it clearly why that would be the main goal. He's like, we take that and, you know, we control everything in terms of, this is a numbers game at this point. He's like, I'll, you know, if we, you know, unstone or whatever term they've used, a whole bunch of people, then, you know, hey, we win. And it makes sense that, you know, it's strategy.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. They go ahead and show a bunch of the, basically the voice over plan of Gin, pretending to be Lillian, and the singer from season one, part of the group that handed down the blonde hair that we see in the village, along with the Russians, I think it was, that were blonde. The people at Tsukasa's village are pretty excited to hear. They immediately are like, well, fuck, man, if the Americans are coming, you know, we're not going to be afraid of Tsukasa or anything like that, because the American military will have their weapons and stuff. And I was like, oh, shit, you know, that would be a good point. What if everyone like runs away or something and it's like, you know, hey, Tsukasa, fuck you, the American military are coming. But Gin plays it off, and I think there might be like some translation issues here, or maybe some context left out, because it sounds like Gin tries to explain to them that yes, America's revitalized, it's alive, of course, but we're not fully equipped to come and rescue you yet. And I think that's kind of a big deal, man. Not necessarily that they'll follow that thread, but that idea of not just the what are they going to do when they find out, you know, society's not back, but what will they do when they find out, like, the subterfuge goes that far, you know?
Well, and this goes back several episodes when, you know, they first were making this plan. This was one of the things they were preparing for. They're like, you know, there's a chance they're going to hate us. And when they learn the truth. And they're still playing into that, the potential. My big question is, I wonder if they're going to give us an exact number. How many people is it in Tsukasa's empire? Yeah. Like, what is the exact number? Because I think that's an important question in terms of, you know, how much power, you know, he essentially wields.
Right. It was a few. I don't think it was the first episode. I'm trying to look through my notes. It was at one point mentioned that, and maybe it wasn't in the first episode, but it was mentioned that I think when Chrome, Magma, and Gin were up at Tsukasa's place, they found the numbered statues, and that was a few months ago. But at that point, he had undone 32, 33 people, and Yo was like next. So I don't know how many past Yo got undone.
If we're dealing with... Because that's the question. If we're dealing with a couple dozen, you know, it's like, okay, they'll be all right. They'll get over it. but if we were dealing with, you know, 150, 200, like, uh-oh.
Yeah.
But then another question is Tsukasa's plan, in terms of his plan, he has to know that the bigger he gets, the more potential for division and other factions forming and stuff mm-hmm. like that. But we're, you know, we're not there at this point. But no, I think Senku, you know, he even knows that there is a chance that they're going to be very angry when they learn the truth. But that's just sort of the price they'll have to pay.
Yep. And they go along showing them collecting followers. And I like the animation with Gin when he puts on the Lillian voice.
Yeah.
They do really cool things of, you know, blending his face with hers or his hair with hers, a shadow transparency type thing. It's they do a lot of different things with it, and it's fun. And he was always, I think he was last season's Chrome, because you were watching Chrome grow, and like we all liked him, but last season Ginn was like the breakout star for me, and it was nice to get to spend more time with him this episode. Any follow up on that or anything?
No, I agree. He's cool. He's one of my top three.
Yeah. But unfortunately, and he says that Nikki's training has paid off, and she's like, yeah, he's doing great, and I'm falling in love, and which is funny, and it's scary though when Yukio shows up. He hears, and he goes over there, and he says, I want to get in on this phone call, and says, you know, yeah, that's really good. It really sounds like Lillian. But then, for us watching the dub, they show us that he starts speaking in a different language, because for us, they start showing us the Japanese subtitles and then American subtitles on top, and everything's written out except for the names, which are, you know, the same in Japanese and English. And that makes me wonder, Brian, allegedly, what language are they fucking speaking over there? Because yeah. Clearly this is meant to be a, I'm guessing maybe it was like Lillian was speaking English and then he starts speaking English.
They specifically, there's a line about the Southern accent.
Right.
Which is interesting that you can, I guess, even in Japan, say Southern accent and that translates to American South. So that's interesting to me.
Yeah. So yeah, we got that, and Senku and Ginn freak out. Ginn's like, but wait, you know, he's being quiet. They know others are there because Yuzuriha and Taiju only bring, you know, groups, because it's, you know, it'd be dangerous to bring one at a time. Not to mention take forever. And Gen's like, you know, I don't know his motives though, you know, because Ginn has been with the Kingdom of Science for quite some time, since, you know, what, episode 12 to 13, I think, is when he comes back, right at the tournament in season one, because he helps out in that. And it's been a while, so he doesn't quite get Yukio, but Senku assesses that Yukio must have been the one to help Chrome out. And Yukio's like, yeah, totally did that to prevent you from coming to rescue him, because if you rescued him, you would die, or he would die. One of you or both of you would die. You know? It's a pretty important moment, Brian, when you realize that Yukio and his motives might coincide with Senku's, when he reveals that he did help and that he did it because he didn't want them to kill each other. What were your thoughts, man? And were you shocked?
Now, Yukio's been interesting ever since he's been introduced. He's become another one of my top characters, actually. Mm-hmm. Because, yeah, you're right. He has these skills. Okay, he's got, you know, he's an archer. He's got these incredible hearing. But he also seems to have been playing both sides to some degree. And like you said, we're trying to figure out, well, what is exactly is it what is his goal? What is he trying to accomplish? And he basically lays it out. He doesn't want death. It's as simple as that. And so he's pushing for that. Now, it is very interesting. He makes the point, you know, I'm all for whoever is against killing. Mm-hmm. But yet again, this show, and especially in this episode, they keep going out of their way, and I've been bringing it up every review, to make it crystal clear that the whole goal of everyone on Senku's side is no killing, no killing, no killing, which leads me to believe that somebody's going to get killed.
Yep.
Because they just keep like pushing this idea that is the end-all, be-all goal of this.
Yeah. No, I agree 100%. Sent. It caught me a bit off guard at first because this is like the yet another high ranking person in Tsukasa's empire that's not all about him, you know. That's not necessarily going to want to follow things the way that he's done, and we can see more of that a little bit later on. Yukio discovers Yuzuriha. This is where he kind of puts things together. He sees her taking a bag of stones that he can hear while she's supposed to be sewing stuff. And he discovers her putting the statues back together. And this is a very, very important part because it's revealed that Senku told her that mission that he told her about, we all thought was the lie. You know, let's go lie to Tsukasa. Senku's dead and let's live with Tsukasa and spy on him. No, that's not the mission, dude. The fucking season one mission that he sent Yuzuriha on was to put together statues that Tsukasa breaks, because if you can get all the pieces before they weather down and put them together, there's a chance that when they're revived, the juice will do the same thing. They'll be covered in cracks, but they'll be alive. The cracks will fill in and they'll be alive. And that is an incredibly important moment for Yukio, which we'll get to after our sponsor. But before that, your reaction to Yuzuriha's mission and the idea of bringing back broken statues, Brian?
That blew my mind. Talk about not seeing that coming, anything, you know, seeing it coming. The fact that this, like you said, ties back to season one. This has been a mission. This has been a goal of Senku's all the way back at the beginning. I didn't see it coming. It shocked me. And, you know, I always laugh, you know, Gundam has such a, you know, a goal of trying to do a whole pacifism and, you know, anti-war, and yet they do a lot of cool action and war scenes. But this is the most pacifist, anti, you know, killing thing I've ever seen. Like, he's taking the dead and he's figured out a way to potentially, essentially bring them back. And I was like, wow.
Yeah. It's like Miyazaki level pacifism, but
even
going so far, some of the commentary I get confused on, because you know, some of the stuff about America, like I've said, are they digging at us or are they like saying some good stuff? I'm not sure. And
yeah, I can't tell either.
Yeah, right. And then you look at how they're showing how war and conflict can be beneficial, can be done with, you know, limited loss of life. It's a very interesting show. I'm not, you know, Miyazaki always tried to show like the horrors of war or war machines. You know, you look at Howl's Moving Castle and was it the Whispers one? Valley of the Whisper? Maybe not, but then Castle in the Sky, especially a lot of war imagery with that one. And
but like I said, dude, you know, Gundam, I'm a big Gundam fan, but it's anti-war, but they have the coolest war scenes ever done animated. You know, it's sort of a weird contradiction.
It's a lot of fun. It was a very shocking moment for me too, because it's like, well, damn, this is yet another crack. Speaking of broken rocks and cracks filling together, a crack in Tsukasa's empire. And, you know, that could be pretty fucking stressful on a person. And, you know, if you are in a place where you can grow things to help with stress, you might check out our sponsors over at growgeneration.com. Take it away.
Grow Generation, where the pros go to grow. For all of your cultivation needs, Grow Generation has the right products, service and staff to make your grow successful. Go to www.growgeneration.com where the pros go to grow.
Something out of the folder and throw it. Well, because, you know, it's a bit of a script read. And I got variations of different people, but, you know, I try to make sure I shake it up and stuff like that. But let's carry on with the after effects of this secret mission and Yukio's absorption of it. And actually, you know what? Because this is kind of an interesting episode. We get a chance to do something I do on the Cantina a lot, which is take the ending of like a episode or movie that has multiple story points going on and split them apart. So let's actually just talk about Tsukasa and what happens between now and his end of the episode pretty much. I think that'll work good. Tsukasa gets told of Chrome's escape. He's like, hey, got it. Dude, use science. What can we do? You know, Yuzuriha or whoever helped him out, yada, yada. Huh? But we learn that Yo had told his subordinate to tell Tsukasa that it was Yo's fault and that Yo died falling off the cliff. And Tsukasa accepts that, apparently. And we then go see him at the grave. He wants to basically pay respects. And Hyoga's there, the spearman, and they have a conversation. And this is actually going to work out real well, I think. They have a conversation about people being at the grave. And then Tsukasa says, you know, I wanted to pay respects to Yo, what we have left of him, which is just the stone eye covering, which he was just wearing for fashion sense, apparently. he starts naming names of other fallen people, and several of them are the people that died in the poison gas, thanks to Hyoga and Homura, and they're in the village raid in season one. And you get to see Tsukasa really fucking grieve, dude. And again, show us that this guy is not everything we thought from season one. Up into him digging into the ground, what do you think of this character development?
Well, it shows that he has his morality or how he views the world is it's not one that I agree with, but he has a sort of a strict code he lives by. Those he deems worthy of life, he legitimately cares about. The old world, if you will, that he hates, he doesn't. He doesn't mind them dying. So it's not that he doesn't value life. He's just very specific in which life he values, which is, you know, pretty radical, you know, belief system. And that's what he is in terms of the way the antagonist of the series so far. So it is interesting. The Yo stuff did irritate me a little bit just because, like you said, he seemed to just sort of buy the story. I didn't like Yo. I mentioned it in our last review.
Yeah.
Well, punk ass Yo ran off. So I'm assuming he'll pop up at some point. Hopefully not this season. but yeah, but it was an interesting scene and what you're about to go into, the look on his face.
Oh yeah.
Holy shit. That was the animation on that was amazing.
We'll get there. We're gonna do this Spider-Verse style. So let's go back to the start point. Yeah, no, you're right. That is such an important thing, and then you're right. What he does next while he's digging is very important. But on the other side, we have Yukio still talking to Senku and Gen, and Yukio goes over why he wants there to be no death himself. He tells Senku that, you know, I have a, you know, this, what's the word I'm looking for?
Batman.
I wrote it down. His, like, you can't kill anyone. He's like, I got a point. Like, you have to agree to this point on me helping you out.
Yeah, this is the condition of which...
Condition. Yeah. There's the word. Okay. So, he's like, I don't want there to be any more death, and this is why. It turns out once he's woken up, he witnesses Tsukasa killing, you know, destroying the statues. And in his mind, he told himself, these are just statues. They can't, if they're not revived, we're not killing anyone because they weren't revived. They're just statues. And if you break them apart, they can never come back anyways, yada, yada. And it's after he sees Yuzuriha and confirms with Senku about the possibility of bringing those people back, that he decides, yes, I will betray Tsukasa to help you, not necessarily join you. He even makes a point of saying that, Brian, like, I'm not joining, but I'm open to helping. And I think that's important, because I could almost see Yukio maybe going off, not necessarily on his own, but maybe with a smaller group of people at the end of this or sometime in the future. I don't know. What do you think about that?
Well, yeah, he definitely seems like someone who has his own, yet again, his own code that he lives by. And like you said, he's not really wanting to necessarily say, I'm with you guys. So I agree with you in the idea that maybe he wants to go his own route at some point. And obviously you'll get to, there's another character that also wants to do that. Yes. And we're starting to see that. You know, this is potentially what the next phase of the series might be. You know, we have Tsukasa and Senku, and we think, okay, those are the two sides. Well, there are individuals within those groups that may also have their opinion on how things should run. I kept saying weeks ago, politics at some point will play a role.
Yes.
Just because that's just the way of things. You know, you get more and more people, and they have to be governed in some way. And I think maybe these are the seeds being planted for that.
Yeah, definitely. So Yukio, you know, he says, I'll make this deal with you. And when Senku says, yeah, sure, that's fine. That was our plan all along. And it's really funny. We get this, you know, again, like, oh, I'll negotiate with them. That's what a mentalist is good for. And Senku's like, now fucking cut to the chase. What the fuck do you want? And it's interesting, because we learn, like you said, this very key detail. Again, going back to season one, Yukio goes, cool, I now know for certain that we got a liar here. And he tells about Hyoga lying to Tsukasa about what happened to the men that died in the poison gas. Tsukasa, like we just told you guys, is grieving them. He believes they were murdered by Senku, not that natural, you know, gas came and killed them. And Hyoga lets Tsukasa believe this, and we learn that not all is comfy and cozy in Tsukasaville, as Hyoga is vying for power, and that there's a split, and that Yukio says he can't sit on the fence anymore. Those two are going to kill each other or come to blow. Pose and possibly kill each other. And again, I won't join you. I can't sit on the fence. I'm open to helping you. Yeah, dude. is he a Tsukasa fan or a Hyoga fan? It's very, very curious. But it's showing these fissures in Tsukasa's world. And you know, he's lost all these people. Homura has been captured. Hyoga's, you know, bumping heads with him. And he's about to learn that the control he thought he had, he doesn't quite have. Senku and Gin are happy with what's gonna, you know, come from their team up with Yukio. And let's cut back over to Tsukasa digging, finding the cell phone, ripping the cord and seeing the box and the technology and understanding that Senku's people have been there and that his people have been to that gravesite repeatedly. And dude, Tsukasa's gonna fucking snap, man. Like, I see this guy losing it. Holy shit. Like, Brian, go.
The look on his face, and it, like I said earlier, it was the animation for that was so amazing because he doesn't have to say anything. The way he rips it up, the strength he uses, and he, you know, he pulls it so the cord rips up so far, and you can see on his face, you see the anger, but the anger to me comes from, they outsmarted me. What the yes. fuck? You know, like, that is blowing his mind. It's enraging him. They outsmarted me. And so you're right. What the hell is he going to do next?
Yeah. I look at this as a guy who's like, look what I gave you. Almost like God complex, you know? You know,
his Absolutely.
People being Adam and Eve. Look what I gave you. I gave you this awesome, you know, stone world free of the burden of knowledge and technology and all of that. And you guys want to go off with Senku over some record player, you know? But I think the betrayal, the lying, all of that is going to really come into play. And I'll be honest with you, after hearing Yukio talk, I think he's honest with Senku. I'm not on your side, is what he tells Senku. And I really don't know what to expect in the last four episodes, Brian. I really, really don't. We get at the very end, we get Taiju and Yuzuriha coming back. We get a really nice reunion. I like Kohaku's, you know, I know who you are, even though I've never met you, when Taiju comes walking up. It's very funny, him trying to hug Senku and not even realizing he doesn't have him, and how Senku just gives him like a tap on the shoulder. And it's nice. They talk a bit about the attack plan. The rupture bladder gun is smart. I figured they were going to use like a steam gun of some sort. And then they go to the cave to fight. And the other American kind of like throw-in thing is Kohaku calls the attack Shock and Awe, which is a reference to the so-called plan going into Iraq of Shock and Awe. Or was that Afghanistan? I don't fucking remember. One of those wars. But yeah, man, I don't know where we're going next, dude. What do you? I mean, I know physically in the map where we're going, but story wise, I love this because I don't know.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, he makes the point that, okay, like you said, their whole plan is just to scare them. They have one shot with this thing, and it's literally just to sort of frighten them. They're gonna bulldoze in there, hope everybody runs away, and then claim it for their own. But I kept my biggest thought with, and I'm sure Senku has a plan, what's to keep Tsukasa from coming in there and with a blade or some kind of weapon and be like, I'm going to kill everyone I see. Yeah. Like, we saw him fight a damn lion or whatever.
Punched a lion.
So what is going to stop that from happening? And I'm assuming Senku has a plan because it's been a lot of mind games, but I believe based on when we saw him and his anger, it's just going to be a pure I'm going to kill mentality. And so, where does it go? How does Senku combat that? How does he hold the cave? You know, okay, you're going to take the cave. Cool. How do you hold the cave? Mm-hmm. Obviously I'm sure there's a plan and we'll get that answer soon. But the fact that I don't know is exciting.
It is definitely. It's like I said, definitely not the greatest episode. Suffers following, what probably my favorite, just because I like Chrome so much. But I gave this a solid B, just a straight B. Little slow, suffers a little bit from follow up, but some amazingly important things and some really, really awesome character moments. So yeah, I gave it a B.
Exact same score.
Okay.
Yeah, B. That's what I wrote down. Said, it wasn't bad in any way. It was a little slow at points, and but it hit really hard. I think the two things that were the standout was the revelation about the secret mission, and then the Ukiyo stuff. You know, because that character is growing and growing, and he's becoming sort of a major player. And I thought this episode did a great job with him. So those were the two standouts for me. But yeah, solid B.
Yeah. Christine had talked to me, and she was like in the B+ area herself. Somewhere in there. I'm really, really excited about anime going forward. We've mentioned a couple times in past weeks some news, things like the Harmony Gold Robotech Macross stuff. I don't think we got a chance to talk on the podcast at all, Brian, but with the last couple of minutes, being such a big Gundam fan, you said on the last episode, and you're kind of right, that we would likely see mechs from Robotech on the big screen before seeing a Gundam, not counting Ready Player One, on the big screen. And you were basically right, but we are going to get a live-action Gundam on our home screen.
Yeah, sort of right, sort of wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you think about the legendary live-action Netflix Gundam movie?
You know, it's crazy because it's interesting that news dropped right after the Robotech stuff.
Yeah, and it was like Warner Brothers was waiting.
Yeah, and I got to thinking about it, and I was like, I love mecha stuff, and I love Gundam, and I would be completely happy if, the next 5-10 years we go into an era where that's the big thing in the theater, and that's the big, franchises. Because to me, there's so many stories and so many animes out there that could be brought out and put on the big screen. Gundam is the big one. The people they attach to it, I think, are fine. My biggest concern, I will say up front, is it's going to be a Netflix film. They specifically said film, right? Yeah. I don't know how you do any Gundam in the span of 2 hours, 2.5 hours. Now, they didn't specify what they were going to do. Is this going to be a completely original idea, or are they going to do UC Gundam, which I know a lot of people sort of want, or are they going to do one of the other million spinoffs that exist? I personally would like UC just because there's some really great characters, has such a massive history. But yet again, going back to my initial statement, how do you do that in the span of 2 hours? I don't know.
You'd have to at least make it... At minimum, it would have to be, 4.5 hour split, hopefully between two films, and you're really going to have to cut a lot of politics.
Yeah, out. And if Netflix had come out and said, we're doing a trilogy, we've invested in it, we're going to put the money in, we're going to do three full-length films, I'd be a little less concerned because I'm like, okay, you know, they're going to space out there. They're going to tell the story. But the fact that they're like, no, we're going to do a movie. I'm like, well, how? Yeah. You know, so fair,
they could still, you know, only do a portion of the original series.
True.
And carry on with sequels. But I do like your idea that maybe we're going to get lucky, like we did with the MCU, where this thing that had been done before and failed, or at least not been as spectacular as the MCU turns out to be, once the MCU gets off the ground, once they discover the magic formula, it's this magical thing, you know? Anime movies, kind of the same deal. We've mentioned it before, like even Japan, and part of its budget, but also part of its their style of filmmaking and style of acting, their anime adaptations aren't great. Do you think, Brian, do you honestly think there's a person on Earth that can unlock the formula beyond even what Battle Angel did?
You know, and I'm glad you brought up Battle Angel. I loved, like, loved Alita Battle Angel, the film. I was shocked at how much I enjoyed it. I think it struck almost the perfect balance of being that the weirdness or the, you know, very anime, you know, not too trying to make it too Western or whatever. No, it was very anime, but yet it appeals to, you know, not just anime fans, I think. And I don't know, as far as unlocking that formula, you know, I mean, this is a big challenge. I mean, they got the guy, the comic book author, that did what, Why the Last Man. Yeah. You know, he's writing. So there's someone who's written large series, so someone who knows how to write. The director that did Kong and Godzilla versus Kong. Which, spoilers at this point, has a Mechagodzilla. And it was done well, as far as the battles and all that, perfect. Yep. So we got someone that knows how to write and write drama and write, you know, really solid characters. We have someone that knows how to do big, giant things fighting. So it seems like they've got the right formula down, you know.
We shall see what comes of it. I know the Your Name live action adaptation has gone through several direct, even John Watts of Spider-Man, MCU Spider-Man trilogy, soon to be fame, was attached to it at one point. An interesting thing about that one is they actually, the studio that Makoto Shinkai, I think is his name, I might have it backwards. The director, you know, of Your Name and Weathering with You and yada yada. They said they really wanted to see a Western take on it. So it's going to allegedly, or, you know, as of the last update, instead of a rural Japan and Tokyo, a rural Japan girl and a Tokyo city boy, you're going to have a rural Native American and a Chicago boy. And it's interesting to actually see the creators of an anime go, no, westernize it, like go for it, because I don't know if everyone's aware, but here in America we got this weird thing with people really not liking that for some reason, even if someone says go do it. So the point being, there's live action anime in the pipe and it might be good, hopefully.
I really do. This would be so great. The fact that, I mean, Gundam, man, it's one of those things I've always thought, it seems like it'd be easy to do. I mean, yeah. In terms, you know, after the Transformers films came out, I was like, all right, so we can do, in terms of the visuals, we can do this, you know. But then it was the question of the balance. Like you said, there's a lot of politics and various story beats that most Gundam series have, and it's like, well, how is that going to appeal to Western audiences? Or can they trim some of that back? What's the right balance? But like you said, we're going to find out because it's coming, and we'll, you know, I'll like it or I won't.
Very, very true. It would be nice to see some good, some better adaptations and even some unique spins. I'm not necessarily sold on the Hollywood Your Name, but I'm definitely open to the idea of doing that, you know, of taking some anime with creative permission and doing stuff like that. So, oh yeah. Everyone out there, thank you guys so much for listening this week. I can't tell you whether or not we'll be back next week. We didn't learn Dr. Stone would be on until Wednesday this week. It is what it is, but I will say we are looking for recommendations on the next thing to cover. I myself finished up the Gridman series and I'm watching Dino Xenon, which is awesome and I can recommend. But yeah, send your recommendations in the comments or to me at that Kyle Malone on Twitter. Subscribe to our YouTube channel. Hit that bell so you'd be notified whenever brand new who celebrity interviews or shows like Breaking Geek Radio, Marvel Multiverse Mondays, or LR Mornings go up on YouTube. And of course, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from for audio versions of all of our outstanding shows. Brian does other things on the interwebs. Brian.
Yeah, you can find me on YouTube. The channel is Pulp Mythos. It's one word, P-U-L-P-M-Y-T-H-O-S, and got all kinds of content up on there. And check out our Snowfall season finale review, which will be up in, well, at least within a day or two of this going up.
There you go. Yeah, guys, do that. Go check them out. Check out our sponsors at growgeneration.com. Thank you all for listening, and we will talk to you next time.
Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino online.
I was only playing for fun, so winning was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's favorite free online social casino. You, too, could have the chance to win life-changing cash prizes. Absolutely anybody could be like Mary. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and play for free now. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18-plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details. The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of the winner.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.